Welcome to this week's edition of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. This podcast is going to be a little bit different. I'm not sitting in my normal studio. This is a living room studio, but I think the quality will be as good as you've come to expect. Now, this week's guest comes by way of Area 3. If you've ever shot the Cornhusker Classic, you may have run into him, as he is the match director for the Cornhusker Classic. So with that, join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Todd Weitzel. How you doing, Todd?
Good. I'm trying to figure out where all the applause is coming from.
That's the crowd behind me. Yeah, well, you know, when you use a virtual background, you don't see the actual audience behind me, but they're there.
I'm not as nervous this way without those hundreds of people.
There you go. So how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. If you would take a moment and just introduce yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Todd Weitzel. I live in Gretna, Nebraska. It's a suburb of Omaha. I lived here for about 21 years. I grew up in North Dakota. I have four children, three grandchildren, and my son and his wife will be having twins any day.
Ooh.
We could even get called while I'm on this podcast. So
wow.
You may be the first to know. So we'll see.
Breaking news.
Yeah, there you go.
I like it.
Yep.
All right, Todd. Now, when we spoke briefly before, you said you have listened to some of the podcasts. So you know the crazy questions are going to come hot and fast right up front, and then it gets easier. All right. So we're going to start with those icebreakers right now, and I'm going to hit you with the first one. What's your favorite movie?
Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, such a classic. Such a great movie.
I was like 12 when it came out or whatever. I think it's one of the first movies I saw in a theater, and to this day, if it's on, I watch it. The Temple of Doom is right behind it. Then all the Indiana Jones went to hell after that. But the first two are good.
Okay.
Didn't some old ones I like. I was trying to think of, like, you know, ages of movies. You know, like old movies, North to Alaska with John Wayne. If I had to pick something from like the 60s, I would pick that one. Modern movies, I don't know. I don't think they're as good as they used to be.
I do like, there are some series, like I like the John Wick series for obvious reasons, but I love the Mission Impossible series.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, the special effects in those things are, and the stunts that he does are just amazing.
You know, there's some series like, Nicolas Cage, National Treasure. You know, they made two of them, right?
They could have
made one of them a year for 20 years. You know,
yeah, you're right.
I don't know why they didn't, but. Anyway, Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, hands down, number one.
I like it. Can't go wrong with Harrison Ford.
There you go.
All right, number two. I've learned a lot of people don't read books, but you're an older gentleman like myself, so you grew up before there was the internet, so I'm sure you've read. What's your favorite book?
I don't have a favorite. I guess Lord of the Rings is fantastic. You know, they're 10 times better than the movies if you like them. So I would call Lord of the Rings probably my favorite.
Okay.
In the last few years, Vince Flynn has a series and all 20 books are the same. The Mitch Rapp series, I think there's 21 books. He comes out with a new one every year. Well, he died, but the guy that took over for him didn't miss a beat of the author. They're great. I love them.
I was reading all of Vince Flynn's stuff because I agree with you. They were great. But when he died of cancer, I lost all interest in the whole series.
I think they're just as good. I think the guy that took over, I can't remember his name. I really couldn't tell. I think he's done a great job. There's another series similar to it. The author is Brad Thor. And it's very similar. It's a guy that's an operator and he goes around the world. You know, it's a thriller type series. And I like those. I like fiction. I don't really need nonfiction that much. When I'm reading, I'm usually looking for an escape a little bit because I read all day long anyway. You know, I was thinking though, the question in the best nonfiction book I ever read was an autobiography by Lee Iacocca.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And to this day, sometimes he'll think, you know, I don't know, I just remember the book. And, you know, I didn't know he was that influential inventing the Mustang. You know, so I thought it was good. So autobiographies, history books, not for me per se. I'd rather just watch the documentary.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had, I think it was Andy Erickson, and he mentioned With the Old Breed. So I actually started reading that.
Never read it.
Yeah, so I actually have started reading it, and it is actually very good. But I know what you mean. Historical or nonfiction books can be dry and boring.
Yeah, I don't know. I just want to think about something else. That's
how I go down that path. Oh, that's funny. Okay.
I can't remember the next questions now.
Oh, you can't, huh? It'll be a surprise then.
I'd be surprised. I remembered the first two.
All right. So I don't know if you're into superheroes, but the third one is your favorite superhero or historical figure.
Superman.
Okay.
I mean, he's the classic ultimate superhero. I mean, I'm like Jerry Seinfeld. Who do you want to be? You want to be Superman? You can beat them all.
Absolutely.
Favorite historical figure, other than Jesus. Probably George Washington or Alexander the Great.
Okay, now why George Washington? That's very intriguing.
I think George, I mean, you know, he's George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, you know, founding fathers, etc. I still to this day find it so interesting that somebody that could have been king, you know, they could have made him king and they would have done it and he didn't want anything to do with it.
Yep.
Oh, the ultimate humility. And
yeah, he was a very humble man.
Yes. I've read some papers on some of the founding fathers and interesting, very interesting guys, very diverse in thought. It took a long time to come out with the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. It was not a whip it out on a piece of paper on the weekend. There was a lot of disagreements about it and they were vehement in their arguments. And
yep.
It's interesting we came together, but I mean, you know, he led George Washington led an army of farmers and militiamen against the greatest army in the world at the time and beat them.
Came out on top. Yep. Yeah.
So Alexander the Great, just because, man, he conquered the known world in his youth, you know, from his 19 to 33 or whatever he was, 31 when he died. I don't even know how old. Might not even be that old. So I've watched some documentaries. I just think it's interesting history that old, how they were able to
do the stuff they did
and lead like they did.
All right. So number four is your all-time favorite gun and caliber, and they don't have to be married together.
My favorite gun, because this is mine because I own it. Not because it's just somebody else I shot it. It's my grandpa's Anschutz 22 Hornet rifle.
Oh, a 22 Hornet.
Yep. So if anybody doesn't know what a 22 Hornet is, it's a 22 caliber bullet. Not much heavier in grain. I think a lot of 22s are 40 grain. I think it's about a 45 grain. But it's center fire, going about 2,500 feet per second or so. And when I grew up, my grandpa had it, my dad had it, I have it now, but I shot a lot of fox in North Dakota when I grew up with that. I made a lot of money with that gun, trading furs. And
okay.
It's an Anschutz. It shoots like, I mean, it'll shoot through the same hole if you're capable. The gun is much more capable than you are, and it shoots like a dream. Love that gun. Love it.
That is not a caliber you hear. That's not a caliber you hear much about. I actually have a rifle that's a 22 Hornet.
Yeah, I mean, I would never reload it. I shoot about, we'll take it out to the range and I'll shoot it 10, 15 rounds a year just to show the gun some love, but there's really no purpose for it anymore for me. I won't get rid of it, but it's an unbelievable gun.
Now, your last one I try to personalize to the guest. You being the gentleman that runs the Cornhusker Classic, what's your favorite memory or event that's occurred around or with the Cornhusker Classic?
Yeah, so I run both of them. I run the Cornhusker Classic, USPSA. This year it's going to be a Hit Factor match. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. And the Steel Challenge. My favorite memory is actually at the first time we did the steel challenge. We moved it. It used to be, they both used to be sectionals. And then we changed the matches and format. Andy Erickson and the Sioux Falls group took over the sectional. We added the USPSA match. So our area basically got another major out of it. And we changed the name of the steel challenge from a sectional just wanted to brand it the same. And the memory I have is the steel challenge 2 years ago, we moved it to the end of September. The weather in Nebraska and this part of the country is gorgeous that time of year. It was about 73 degrees, sunny, beautiful day. And we try to keep our match very affordable. We don't want to price our local shooters out from coming to stuff. And there's these couple gentlemen that shot that morning, older gentlemen from our club that had started shooting that year. And they hung out in a couple lawn chairs in the shade and just watched shooters all afternoon. And I don't know why. I never get it out of my mind. It was just a beautiful day. And they sat there in this spot and they just watched their friends and world champions come through the stage all afternoon. And they just had a blast. And they came afterwards and said it was one of the most fun afternoons they've ever had. And that's really what you want people to have as an experience at a match. People are going to win. They're going to lose. But just having that much fun spectating, I'll never forget it. So I want to make sure that we put on a match that you could conceivably just have fun watching, I guess, right? You know, it's their home range. The banners are up. It looks different even though you're there every week. And they just loved it. I'll never forget it.
Making indelible marks in people.
It was. I'll never forget those guys coming up to me and, you know, I saw them there and that they enjoyed that day so much.
In one of your answers, when you mentioned the 22 Hornet, you said you hunted fox in North Dakota growing up.
Yep.
So obviously you grew up around guns because you're hunting at a young age. Like how young were you when you were hunting fox?
Oh, I don't. Well, it's probably 12 to 16, 17. Actually, okay. After high school. And then after that, in the 90s, when I was older, the PETA took over and they're not worth anything. So you used to get 50 to 70 bucks for a fox. If you skin it, you'd get more, but I thought it was too much work. So we just froze them and hauled them to town. Shooting, yeah, I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a farm with 1,300 acres and no neighbors for a while. We had a lot of trees and... You know, killed blackbirds and barn swallows with my Daisy Red Ryder BB gun. I didn't have the compass in the stock like Ralphie in Christmas Story, but it was a good BB gun. It did its job. I still have it. The spring's worn, and I can't seem to find one that fits. So, I mean, I always did that. And then when I was old enough, you know, I would deer hunt going with my dad. We didn't bird hunt or anything like that. We would deer hunt and did that until I moved away. And I haven't really deer hunted since because my kids and my wife really don't want to eat it. So if they're not going to eat it, I just don't go get one because I probably won't eat a whole deer. But so I've shot. The interesting thing when I was young is, do you remember the JCs? You know, it's like a men's club, like the Lions.
Yeah.
Not even going around anymore. So my dad was always in that. And I was about 12 and they started the Daisy, the BB gun company, started a youth marksmanship BB gun program. I don't even know if they still do it or not. I've looked, but I haven't found anything. And so our local JCs and some around the state and the region, I don't know if they bought or Daisy gave them these guns, but there were these Daisy single shot aperture sighted BB guns. And you would set tarps up in like a gym or a shed and put targets at 10 yards. And you shot prone, sitting, kneeling, standing. And we did that for about 2-3 years. And my friends and my classmates and I, we were pretty good at it. I mean, our team won a couple state titles and it was kind of fun. So I've always been shooting, I get, you know, growing up. So that's how I got started hunting and shooting on the farm. And that Daisy program through the JCs was actually pretty interesting. I enjoyed it. Then we kind of aged out. I think at 14 or 15, you had to quit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So did you ever have any desire to do any type of rifle competition then?
No, I didn't know such a thing existed. You know, we did that and then, you know, we hunted and we shot rabbits and stuff on the farm. That's all we did. And then I went to college and you get married and you have kids and you forget about it for a while, right? And until nothing happens, I've always had, you know, a couple guns around. I've always had my rifles and shotguns that I would use, and then I always had a pistol. And as my kids got older, I would take them. Well, for myself, I would go to an indoor range enough to make sure I was practiced up, and I would take my kids when they got older so they weren't afraid to handle a firearm if they would need to. And that's about all I did for 20 some years. About 2016, a new indoor range opened close to where we live in the Omaha area. And so I went a couple times because it was close and it was very well run, family oriented, nice indoor club. It's the middle of winter. And so my wife went with me and she says, "I want my own gun. I don't like your guns." I got this old buck mark, stainless steel buck mark. It's about 6 pounds, kind of like a Ruger Target, you know, very heavy. I want my own gun. So we went and bought her a lightweight buck mark. And she's a photographer and, you know, she has good trigger control. And we would go, I don't know, once a week for a half hour and play around. And that spring, they did a bullseye shoot at this indoor club. $5 to sign up. Sure, let's do it. My wife won. And
wow,
she's pretty good. And anyway, the fun part is we met a bunch of people that shot practical shooting out at Eastern Nebraska Gun Club. And they said, "Hey, we're actually putting on a new shooters intro class that spring." And so we signed up for it. And they set up 2 steel challenge stages and a small USPSA stage. It was probably a classifier or something, or a very small stage. And they had about 4 or 5 people that walked through all the range commands, you know, the range rules, all the rules. And they would demo the stage, you know, kind of here's what you do. And they went through it at a pace that wouldn't scare you, even though they'd been shooting for a while. You know, they knew you were new. And then we didn't necessarily have all the right equipment to do that. But like, for instance, I didn't have a holster. I just brought my M&P. And they said, "Well, just stand and just, you know, low ready is fine. And then just walk through the stage." And then we did a couple steel challenge stages. And we've been hooked in thousands upon thousands of dollars later. Hundreds of thousands of rounds later, we're still hooked. So that's how we got into it. It's kind of a long story, but that's kind of how we got into practical shooting.
So how long were you married before you found practical shooting?
Oh, 25 years.
Wow. 20. Okay.
Close. About 23 yeah. 30 years, yeah. The kids started in the house is what happened. I think we had one left, so we were almost empty nesters. And even those last couple of years when they're in the house, you know, they're not around.
You have more freedom. Yeah.
You have more freedom. And so we've been hooked ever since. So we shoot together. I mean, it's pretty rare that we're at a match without each other.
That's awesome.
The good or bad news is maybe that if one of us wants a gun, the other one says, "What do I get?" So we usually have double of everything.
I'd be like, "All right, you get a gun, I get ammo. Next time I get a gun, you get ammo."
That's exactly how it works.
Yeah, there you go. So what are you and her competing with gun-wise now?
Well, so we shoot steel challenge primarily.
Okay.
So we'll shoot 22 rifles, we'll shoot PCCs, and we'll shoot 22 pistols, and I'll shoot center fire pistols. We'll use Volkhortsen out of Iowa, which is close to here, for our rifles. We both shoot JP5s for PCC, and then we're on the Precision Defense shooting team, which Precision Defense bought a company called CWA Rimfire Race Guns last year. And so they started a team, and we were fortunate enough to be on it. So we shoot their 22 pistol. It's a 2211. Think of a 2011, but it's actually a 22.
Okay.
So it's a full size handgun, but it's a 22 pistol. It's an amazing, amazing pistol. So we shoot that. And then I'll shoot my Canik steel frame, or I'll shoot my open gun. And then in USPSA, we both shoot open division. So I'll shoot an Atlas Gunworks, and my wife shoots a Venom Custom gun.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Then we started doing some other stuff. We built Precision 22s because, you know, God knows we didn't shoot enough. So built a Tika for her, and I have a CZ 457. And then last year, just on a whim, a friend of ours has been dogging on us for about 2 years. Come shoot a lever action silhouette match. You know, where they put the steel out there, the pigs and chickens. And they happen to be on a weekend every month where we have nothing to do, and it is a hoot. So, of course, we had to buy one. We didn't buy two of those. We just bought one. We share it. I don't think I need two lever actions, but we just love it. So we like shooting everything.
30 cal? What's the caliber of your lever?
357/38 special. So they do two distances. Oh. They do the rifle distance and the pistol distance. A 357 will get out there far enough. And I didn't feel like buying two lever action guns. So that's what a lot of people out there do, is that they use the 357 for the rifle distance and the 38 for the pistol distance.
So what distances are we talking when we're talking lever action rifle versus lever action pistol?
So the rifle is 50. There's four sets of targets. There's 50, 100, 150, and 200. Okay. And it's all aperture sight. There's no, you know, no optics here. So it's all iron sights. You got an aperture mounted on the stock. And then the pistol caliber distance is 40 yards, 50 yards, 75, and 100.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you can use the 357 in the rifle, you said? It'll get out to 200? Okay.
Well, there's no minimum for the rifle. It's just, it's up to you. Can your gun get out there? And the 357, right. If you load it up hot, it goes 200 yards, no problem. It's probably dropping a foot.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. It's like, where's your hold on a 100-yard silhouette?
Well, I don't know. I just know how far I twist that aperture sight. But I bet, I can't remember. When we sighted it in, I bet you it was a foot and a half.
At 100 yards?
At 200.
Oh, 200. Okay. All right. Well, that's not bad.
No. I think it's starting to drop pretty hard at 200.
Yeah, I would imagine at about that 150-yard mark, you start getting a drop in.
Yeah.
Retained velocity.
200 yards, the target that's out there doesn't fall. It's just a ram, and you hit it. It's actually pretty big. But at the 150 yards, you have to knock them off. That 357's got a big enough grain bullet, they fall off pretty good. It's fun.
So some decent retained energy then at 150. Nice. Yeah,
it's a big bullet. I mean, what is a 185 grain bullet, I think?
Well, and one of my questions was going to be, what all do you guys compete in? But so Steel Challenge, USPSA, lever action, and are you doing 22 PRS at all?
No, it's lever action. It's just casual. We wouldn't travel for that. We started doing the local, not PRS, it's NRA Bullseye with the 22.
Oh, okay.
That's all okay. I actually have a meeting this Thursday, because I'm the president of our gun club this year, Eastern Nebraska Gun Club. And people have been bringing up over the last couple, 3 years about starting up an NRL 22 discipline.
That's what I was trying to think of.
At some different clubs. It's certainly growing very fast. Uh-huh. 22 ammo's cheap. You know, you don't have to get these 6.5 Creedmoor bullets and load them by hand.
You don't need all the distance either.
No, you don't need the distance. I mean, you know, right. So if you look up NRL 22, it's kind of a practical precision shooting event. If you want to look it up online, you know, you're moving a little bit. You're not running around like a USPSA course, but you know, you're moving up and down.
Yep. Different positions,
different barriers or positions, and it's timed. And it's timed pretty tight, some of the stages that they put out. So you want to make sure you can cycle it through. They have two divisions, and I can't remember what they call them. And it's just based on dollar value of your weapon. I might be wrong, so don't quote me anybody on this, but I think if your gun's worth $1,000 or less, that includes the optic, by the way, that's one division. And if it's worth more than $1,000, you're basically an open.
Yeah, it's almost like open in production.
Yeah. It's
something like that. Yeah. Okay.
So, something very affordable for people to get in. That's why I'm a big fan of 22s. Because I think a lot more people that know that practical shooting does have rimfire involved. It's a very low cost barrier to entry in a lot of sports.
100% agree. But like anything else, I mean, you know more than most that you could spend $4,000 on a nice 22.
Oh God, yeah, mine aren't cheap.
Rifle. Yeah, no, they're not. So you can go top end on a 22 and that thing will drive tack. So
yeah, you know, I've used an example before when with some people asking about what to shoot, and we would go to that indoor club. We don't shoot indoors much anymore because once you start doing this, in shooting at paper inside is kind of boring. But you'd see these people, you know, these guys would bring their wives in on a Friday night and they're checking in at the desk and thinking, you know, what are you going to shoot? Well, I'm going to have her shoot my 45. She's never coming back again.
Right.
They're not going to, dude, buy a Buck Bark, buy a Ruger, buy a bunch of mags and cheap 22 ammo. And it's a pretty good chance you can get your wife to come shooting with you if you're not, you know, giving her those big guns. Because, I mean, most people just want to have a good time. And you can get proficient with grip and trigger control and all that stuff without shooting a center fire pistol. It's all translatable.
Agree. 100%. Any chance you guys will do small bore?
Well, you mean small bore precision shooting?
Yeah, I mean small bore. It's just another version of the 22 competition.
Oh, we do. Yeah, our club does that.
Okay.
We do a couple. Unfortunately, some of our practical shooting matches are the same day as that discipline, so we can't do all of them. Mm. But yeah, it's fun. I tell you what, my wife's really good at it. She did her first one, and they shot. It was an 800-point course, you know, for the 80 shot.
Aggregate, yep.
She shot a 799 with 61 X's her first time.
Whoa, damn. Yeah. So she's got some talent there.
Yeah, so I got her a new scope for Christmas. We actually sighted it in on Sunday. And
here's your reward.
She was shooting through the same damn hole. It's cheating.
Wow.
She says I should get a new scope, but I don't want to get the same one she has. That way I actually have an excuse, even though I know I would lose anyway.
All right, so she has a Tika, you said. Mm-hmm. And what did you guys what did you buy her for Christmas to replace what she had?
It was the same gun. I replaced the scope.
Right, I mean the scope.
Yep, so I bought her I had a discount code from Vortex that took a lot off, by the way. And I bought her the Vortex Golden Eagle 15x60 power.
Okay, I got to ask you then. So you guys have taken it out and shot it. Have you tried shooting at the 60 power?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're at 100 yards. That's too much power at that close.
It is, but my question is, I've done a lot of rifle shooting and I've looked through a lot of scopes. Typically when you get into that higher power like that, you get like a distortion, almost like a haze and some fuzziness. How does it look at 60? It's crazy powerful. So what does it look like at 60?
Clear as day.
Nice.
But I think on a hot day, I think is where the problem, I think you'd start seeing that mirage where, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it was a cool day. It was, sick, you know, 55, 60 degrees, actually pretty nice for March. But I think on a 90 degree day, I think you might get some fuzz and mirage out in that distance if you were turning it up that high.
I think you're going to get that except for, you know, unless you're buying a $5,000 rifle scope, you're going to be affected by that. So,
yeah,
I don't think that's a big deal. I got a buddy
that has a Night Force, and I think his goes to 52 power, and I was looking at 50 power, something like that. And he was at 300 yards last summer on a hot day. When we looked through it, you could see the mirage. You know, he had to turn it back to about 35.
And then
it kind of cleared up then.
Now, have you done any mirage training?
No.
So what you end up doing is, so like, let's say you have to back down to 35 power at 300 yards. What you then do is you take your focus and you back your focus off to say 275 yards, but it will actually allow you to focus on the mirage at the target. And you can actually see the direction clearly of the mirage. So you can get a wind reading at the target.
That sounds like graduate school. And I'm in about first grade here with this stuff.
All right, let me know when you hit junior high and then we'll start talking.
We built some nice, what I would call affordable 22 precision guns. If I was going to do it all over again, I bought my CZ-457 first with the match barrel. It wasn't that expensive. And then she wanted one and we looked at the Tika because somebody else had one. If I was going to do it again, I would get a Tika.
Tikas are nice.
Yeah. It was cheaper even.
Yeah, they make a nice gun, whether it be – a center fire for PRS or whatever. They're nice.
Yeah, so we might buy a T3X, maybe a 223 if we want to do some more longer range shooting for fun. I'm not going to get into any of those big calibers, but I think we might get a 223 or something like that. Maybe we'll go to a 30 cal of some kind just to reach out a little further for fun, but we're not going to get too crazy into the precision world.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it sounds like you guys are casual shooters in the rifle world.
We're trying to fill the weekend for the most part. Well, we're serious about it. We're serious about the things we're serious about it, but we do want to be able to have options on the weekend and, you know, where maybe we're not have a competition going on and do something much more casual and just get involved. You know, plus being involved at the club level, like I say, I'm president of the club this year. I'm going to try some other disciplines as a primary method to meet people at the club that I wouldn't normally meet because I don't shoot those disciplines. So I want to make sure that, hey, do the F class and high power guys really have what they need on the range? Is there something we can do for them? You know, there's the Swiss rifle, the vintage sniper guys. Do they have all the targets and stuff in their sheds that they need that we need to look for budgets next year? Just making sure that all these disciplines have what's needed to be able to put on a good match and have a good event and not have any problems when they're putting something on.
Let's go in a different direction for just a second. Based on everything you just said, and you said F-class NRA, so I know what they are because I've competed in NRA, first time being in 90 myself, but that's what I grew up around, was high power NRA matches. What is the size of this gun club? And what do you guys offer?
So we offer a lot. We don't have a super long range. Our longest range is 600.
Okay,
so we don't have an 800,000 yard range. And there's probably not the availability or ability to even do that with the land around us. So we have a 600 yard range, you know, and there's berms every 100 along the way. There's a 300 yard range that has berms at 50, 100, 2, and 300. And then we have a 100-yard range that is much more secluded, very level. You know, people go down there to get a little more of an intimate setting. You're not shooting that far. It's only 100. I'd like to think more about that as more of a rimfire range because sometimes it gets shut down for various reasons because there's homes about 2.5 miles away. So if there's no ROs present, we close that range. But I think keeping that open to rimfire all day long would be acceptable. You know, rimfire is not going 2 miles away. And then up top, we have 5 pistol bays that were added about 6 years ago. There's a one that's about half done. We're hoping to get the funds to be able to finish that in the next couple of years. And then down in our lower pistol bays, which is all of where our practical shooting takes place, there are 7 bays and room to be able to add another one. So it's fairly decent size. We have about 2,300 members, like most. So it's a sizable membership. It's very affordable. It's $150 a year.
Nice.
Not very expensive. We raised it. It was $125, but you know, with costs going up and various things, we finally raised it a little bit, but it's still very affordable. And I would say, like most clubs, it's probably 300 or 400 people that use it heavily, you know, that are there often. It's like most clubs, it's probably 10-15%. But there's always people out there bring guests. It's a $10 guest fee. People down there, and we have ROs that, you know, maneuver around on a side by side, making sure everybody's safe. And it's, you know, it's a good club. Have about half between Omaha and Lincoln.
So the ROs are volunteer?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. They do a great job.
Is it an NRA RO certification?
Yes.
Sounds like a big club. I mean, 2,300 members, you know, that's pretty big.
Yeah, we built a couple, last year we built a couple sheds down by our pistol bays. We had one shed with the equipment and growing pains. Then we had a Connex, you know, an old semi-trailer full of crap.
Yep.
And so about 5 years ago, we had a gentleman start up. He retired and he started up a Thursday night steel challenge. And we shoot steel challenge every Thursday night from April 4th to the end of September. And in 3 years, just that raised enough. We built a shed. So now we have more room down there. And then last year we built a new shed up top for more equipment storage, side by side meeting rooms, etc. So it's definitely a growing club, and I think over the next years, as we develop a strategic plan, we can add more pistol bays and look at other options that we can do. Electronic gates, that's something we'd like to do, get a little better handle on who's actually coming in, even if there's no RO present. At least you can get a record of who's using the range.
Cool.
Yeah,
man, that's, you're sitting here talking, you're like F-class NRA and small bore and all well, this stuff. All. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, wow, there's a lot going on here. That's no got to be a big setup.
I mean, there's a
no place shotgun.
No, there's a place for somebody can set up their own thrower.
Okay.
So many shotgun clubs around us that, I mean, if you want to shoot traps, sporting clays, skeet, there's places all over. You should go there and do that because we're not set up for that.
So you say there are 7 pistol bays and you just had 5 built. Do you use both of those for the Cornhusker Classic?
No. So the ones up top, the 5 up top, those are always for general use. For the Cornhusker Classic, we will take the 100-yard range because there's a gate from the pistol bays to the 100-yard range, and we can set up 2 bays there. And then we have, generally we'll take one of our wide bays, one of the 7, and we do 2 speed shoots on it. Because you like to have a short course on there, and so it's a 10 stage match. We couldn't do more than that under our current setup. If you wanted to do something like an area match, you would have to take the top bays, and then you're in essence kind of shutting the club down for the weekend.
Right.
And I don't know if we don't have enough walls and props to be able to put an area level match on.
Okay. So after 24 years of marriage, you find practical shooting in 2016.
Yep.
How do you guys got addicted like everybody does?
Yep.
First time out. How do you go from, oh Lord, we just shot our first and we're addicted, to now you're running the Cornhusker Classic?
So
he giggles.
Yeah, you know, shit, I don't know. It happened so fast. So, you know, we would just shoot every match, the local match. You know, we have our USPSA matches are the first weekend of every month, and the Steel Challenges are the third weekend of every month. So we would shoot 24 matches a year at minimum. We just went to them all. And so we really found people that had the same kind of, you know, everybody meets friends, right? So you found people that you interact with well, and you watch and you visit and you discuss ways to improve from when you're a novice, you know, when from you're a beginner, what should you work on? Well, it's basic handgun fundamentals, which you should never lose no matter how good you're getting in working on that sort of thing. Steel Challenge came very easy, much easier to us because I grew up on a farm, mostly shooting rifles. So it felt more natural to me. Than a pistol does. And we just shot them all and we started getting better. And then we started fine tuning equipment, you know, to the point where the equipment could help you, then we would make those moves. You know, I suppose like a golfer, you know, does the $800 driver really make you any better? It probably does it when you're new, but I guess if you're maybe a 5 handicap trying to get to scratch golfer, maybe it does. But, you know, we would make those improvements along the way, and we found the equipment that we like, and we've stuck with it. And we started match directing our local Steel Challenge about 4 years ago. They needed a new match director for it. And so I said, I'll do it. And Michelle does stats. I do the match directing. And then our club has a long history of putting on major matches in both disciplines. A very long successful history because they used to put on the sectional. And so 2 years ago, the gentleman that was running the previous Cornhusker Classic and the sectional for a couple of years, you know, had a kid, you know, time gets away from you, you get busy. And they asked, and I kind of volunteered to do it. And I don't really match direct the local USPSA matches at all. Just the major. Cause to me, it's project management. It's not really about the match. I don't think you have to be a GM in shooting to be able to put on a good match. I think you just have to be organized. And we have a lot of people that do things to help put on monthly matches and the major matches that you don't have to micromanage them. They've been doing it for years, right? You just have to make sure things are coordinated and that you're bringing new people into the fold. And it's gone well. I think it's went great. Last year was the first year I did the USPSA match, and I think there was one snafu. It was not a big one. I remember it because I like to have none, but there was one scoring issue with one competitor, and we learned from it, but the match went on great. We're excited for it this year. It's going to be a Hit Factor match this year, not USPSA, but the competitors, other than the division names and a couple rule changes, really won't notice the difference.
So I assume you're an RO?
Yep.
Okay. So you did that, then you volunteered to be the match director. Okay.
Yep.
All right, so let's go ahead and talk about that then, because on your Instagram, which I have up on my other screen over here, I have the Hit Factor action shooting post, and I was going to ask you, I know that, well, I guess we'll start there. You're in Area 3.
Yep.
All right, so we know the whole situation going on there at the moment.
Yes.
And according to Andy Erickson, people are pissed. Very. So, yeah, and I completely agree with it. So let's talk about, can you give me some differences between what would have been the match and what will be the match? Go ahead.
Very little difference in what the competitor will notice. So when that happened, I'll talk about both sports for a second, because the USPSA crowd and the Steel Challenge crowd have different personalities and views on the organization. And it's, well, not the organization per se, but because of the nature of the sport. Remember, Steel Challenge is always a classifier, and the people that get into that like that. And so running outlaw matches would, in essence, cut off the knees on some of the people that like to compete. So we did not... We will still run Steel Challenge matches. The Cornhusker Steel Challenge match will be a level one. In order to break the rules, we just will not use the word championship in the match, and then I can call it whatever I want. I can be a level one. That's the rule.
Okay.
So that's the Steel Challenge part. The USPSA crowd is very much more in tune, because the USPS organization, even though it owns both sports, is much more of a practical shooting versus a speed shooting organization. And so when Scott was booted off the board, and then Mr. Rizzi a couple days later, and then reinstated, people in our area became very enraged. Scott's a great guy. He's a range master for our match. He's going to be the range master for our match this year. He puts on the Area 3 match. He helps clubs everywhere. He's been involved in the sport in 20 years. And I said on another podcast, and I'll use the same analogy again, but he got a 10-year prison sentence for doing 56 in a 55-mile-an-hour speed zone. And it's stupid. The fact in the last board meeting that they are even waiting on a legal opinion for this thing is really irrelevant to me. Just reinstate him. You know, this can all be over. Reinstate Scott. The Area 2 guy can go away. When those two things happen, we'll change the match back.
Okay, that was going to be a follow-up question, is what causes the end of this? And you just answered it.
Yeah, we've been saying the same thing for a while. So, you know, that happened basically over the Christmas holiday. So our club and several section coordinators from the various Area 3 got together. But our club, and we polled our shooting base, and we were following what our customers want. The USPSA guys want to protest. And the Steel Challenge guy, they want to protest to a certain level, and that's what we're doing. So I am not a fan, and I've said this on another podcast, of running a USPSA match and just not paying. I think it's disingenuous. It's just my opinion. Because at some point you're going to have to pay it, right? If they meet your demand, you're probably going to have to write that check. So we took the PCSL rulebook as a starting point, the rules we wrote are not PCSL. They don't really resemble it much at all, other than we didn't want to use USPSA rulebook, and we scrubbed all the stuff out of it, made some refinements, created divisions that mimic USPSA, and that's the rulebook we're going to use. I know the Minneapolis area, they're running those matches. Andy Erickson's going to use the same rulebook for the Great Plains. And based on what I'm seeing in the downloads, I think a lot of people might very well be using that rulebook out there. But we're not breaking any USPSA rule. We have our own divisions. They're not even called what the USPSA divisions are. There's some changes in there. So back to your question on what the difference is on what somebody would notice in our match in June. There's no single stack and there's no revolver. They're low competition points and shoot something else, or you can shoot your single stack and what's called enhanced irons, which is basically limited. And you can shoot your revolver in the open division if you want to, or you can shoot an I-Core match because we have plenty of those.
Oh, you guys have I-Core matches too.
Oh, yeah. They're pretty popular. So that's the divisions. The one big difference on divisions is the opposite division. So practical irons is production. Practical optics is kind of carry optics, but it's 15 rounds. So it's basically production with a red dot.
Okay.
So carry optics probably should be. Enhanced irons is the equivalent of limited, and enhanced optics would be basically a combination of limited optics and a fully mag-loaded carry optics gun. So if you shoot carry optics and you want to use your, you want to load your mag up to 23 rounds, then enhanced optics is for you. And then open. Obviously, open is NPCC. Those are what they are.
Right. All right, so let's talk carry optics real quick, since it's the most popular division.
Uh-huh.
Someone who's used to running a carry optics rig coming to Cornhusker Classic, other than mag size, meaning you can only load 15.
How much is in the mag? You can use the 141 millimeter mag.
Right. Yeah, I misstated what it was there.
To clarify, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What other changes would I need to make to my gear or setup?
Nothing.
Okay.
That's it. You want to shoot 15 rounds or do you want to load it up? That's your choice.
Okay.
And put your mag well on, obviously, for enhanced.
For enhanced.
Your mag well
on. Okay. That's good to know. And I have said that I agree with what you said, that carry optics should probably be 15. While I love loading my plus four mag extensions all the way up with my Canic, it probably should be, if you're going to differentiate between limited optics and carry optics, then it's probably going to be drop the magazine capacity down to production, make it more like production optics. Mm-hmm. And limited optics can take over the carry optics, but with the added enhancements.
Yeah. I mean, if the protest would happen to go on longer, we'll probably have to refine some things. We didn't get into weighing the guns and stuff like that. We just want a basic rule set. Other than that, as far as the match rules, video evidence is allowed. That doesn't mean it's going to help you, but if you have a good video of it, the Rangemaster is allowed to look at it. And the other rule we instituted was IPSC uses this, where you can, on the written stage briefing, require that the shooter must stay within the fault lines.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to a lot of matches where, you know, that stage would have been great if you were required to stay within the fault lines. And it gets I think that would be a good add to USPSA. You just put it into briefing.
100%. I think you should be able to write the stage brief how you want, and people have to follow that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, our club put on I'm unable to go to it, but they put on a Hit Factor rifle match this past weekend. So they let everybody use their rifle caliber carbines, you know, their ARs. They ran the same rules, and I think one of the stages they said you have to stay within the fault lines, but they also did like a mandatory reload. That's a big difference. which you can't do in USPSA. I don't think you can anyway. Maybe I'm, you know, you can on classifiers, right? But
right.
Normal stage, you know, they said you must reload after your first shot and before your last shot. Do it wherever you want. And they did that, you know, because they got 30, 40 round mags in these rifles. So
right.
To make it interesting is it's not that easy. If you don't practice reloading your carbine, you know, it's a good test. I wish you could have
rules
like USPSA, because that would fix some of these things with how many rounds, you know, even an open guys, you know, like me with 29 rounds in the mag, doesn't matter if it's a 16 round stage, you're going to change your mag. Yeah. So I think some of the outlaw / hit factor matches and the rules that people are using should really be, if you had intelligent people looking backwards at it, hopefully when this current situation is all done, should really be looked at it being instituted as options for match directors and stage designers. You know, being able to add some more variety and some twists and turns that's out there without getting silly. But there's some good things that people are doing that should be looked at as putting in the rule book.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice where at the end, we look back on this and go and just call it the grand experiment.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, everybody's experimenting with a bunch of different things. Let's see what worked. Talk about it. Maybe implement some of it.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see. Hopefully, it'll take a long time to do it, but hopefully with some of the, we'll call them recess appointments that will be going on in the next couple months, hopefully you start getting enough votes on the board that you can start to tackle the imminent financial issues.
Right.
Basic governance. And then hopefully over time, you can get back to what they're supposed to be doing and focusing on the sport once you get past the, you know, the current issues.
What number Cornhusker Classic will this be for you this year?
Just the second one for me.
Second one, okay. For some reason, I was thinking it was three.
The third Steel Challenge, second hit factor match.
Any major changes from the first time you did it to now?
No. Well, we'd like to do a style. I think most match directors like to do this. Last year, we didn't have a lot of cover. There was a lot of open shots, very little cover, but you had to be in the right spot. So when you were in the right spot, you could throw rounds downrange. This year, we're trying to look at stages and try to slow people down a little bit, a little more cover, try to slow the hit factors down a little bit. One thing we did last year that we put into place, and we'll do it again this year, that the staff really liked, is we had ROs for the ROs. You know, so our staff shoots on Saturday, and you've worked match as staff, right? So, you know, you're shooting, you're loading mags, you're taking the nook, you got the timer, you're running all over and trying to get out of there so you get a decent night rest before your long day the next day. So we have three squads of staff, and we made sure each squad had two people that were going to shoot Sunday, RO'd the ROs on Saturday. So the staff really felt like they got to shoot a match. So we're going to do that again. And I think a couple other matches saw that we did that. They're going to try to do the same thing. So at least the staff can feel like they have a competitive equity a little bit by trying not have to do so much while they're shooting their match. Because, you know, we have a lot of good shooters on our staff and want to make sure that they have that same ability to compete within focus. So that was a nice thing we did.
That's the that's similar to what the North Carolina section did as well.
Did they do the same thing out there?
Okay. They did. They had what they called like roaming RO. They just shot at another time, but they focused on running those RO squads through on staff day.
Yeah, that's what we did. And the staff really liked it.
Any thoughts on staff reset?
We don't have enough to do that. I'm going to probably get some Boy Scouts or something to help on the two long steel challenge stages this fall, just to do the painting. But I don't think we would be able to get enough people. We have a lot of ROs in our club. We have to use like two or three from outside. But the staff reset, to me, that's a little too much work. I think reset is sometimes overblown. If you could just make sure the squads know what they're supposed to do. But I don't think I could get enough people to do it at our match. We will throw an extra RO on on stages that maybe have some complicated setup, and they'll take care of, you know, a swinger or a stomp box or something like that.
Right.
To focus on that, to help that piece going, but just the basic taping and painting, yeah, not a priority for us.
Now, how long do you see yourself running the Cornhusker Classic?
I'll do maybe a couple more years. I joined the board of the club, and then I said, well, it's my last year of the term, I'll be president of it, and then I think somebody else needs to take their turn. Just like I was on my church board once. I did my term. I think you should get involved in your club if you can. And there's everybody out there has skills and knowledge and things that they should give to their club, and you should take your turn doing. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not going to do it forever. Man, I might snowbird or something in a few years. I might be out of here shooting someplace else.
Area 6, here I come.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, we have a lot of people that have the skill sets to absolutely do it. And at some point, they should take their turn, and they should do their 2-3 years, and they'll have the ideas, and they'll put into place. And I think most places would hope over time, you hope your match just, you know, has its own, is viewed as a match that people want to go to, and you try and you experiment with different things, and you learn, and the things that work, you keep doing, and the things that don't, you stop. But no, I won't do it forever. I don't think. I'm not certain yet, but I'm not going to do it forever.
Okay. Any, I mean, you've been on the board of a church, you've been on the board of your gun club. Any chance you'll be on the USPSA board anytime?
If I was retired, I would consider it. It depends on the situation. I mean, the people that are going to be on the board right now for the next couple, 3 years are going to have to devote an incredible amount of time to it. I do not currently have the ability to probably give it the focus that it would require in its current state, which is why I didn't want to get involved. Besides, we have an area director, it's Scott Ernberg. So until they say he's not, you know what I mean? Andy, it would be great. So if for some reason Scott is unable to, for some reason, then Andy will be good. But until that happens, Scott's my District 3 area director. We're district, no, not an area. Like the Hunger Game.
Exactly. Oh, this is funny. Yeah.
My wife actually made a shirt that says that, District 3.
That's hysterical. A couple of things I wanted to go back to was growing up, did you ever watch Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember. Was it on Saturday or Sundays, whatever it was. Sunday nights, I think.
Yeah. Amazing. That was awesome. And you posted a picture of the greatest handheld game in the history of the world, which was the old classic football game.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Where is it? It's down here somewhere. I can't see it. It's too dark, but it's right down there on my shelf.
I can't believe, I mean, I don't even know where mine went. I had one as a teenager. No idea where it went, but holy cow, I was shocked when I saw that picture because that brought back memories.
Well, I had the white one first, and you couldn't kick on that one. So the green one, remember, you could pass. So the green one you could pass on. And so it's the original, by the way, from the 70s. And I was afraid, it was in this box of stuff that my mom had kept over the years. We were just going through our storage room. And I thought, I'm going to open up the back of that thing. And I thought that 9-volt battery is going to be corroded. This thing shot. Nope. It looked good. I put a battery in, it turned right on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. I can still remember that. I mean, I don't think I ever passed. I don't remember because I was never good at it on that game, but man, I could run. I could run forever on that thing.
Oh yeah, that's fun. I remember playing that thing. So I showed it to my grandson. He's like, "What's a stupid thing?" You know, playing on a big screen.
All right, so you have a Canik Rival S, so the steel version. You said you have shot it in competition. Steel challenge, USPSA, both?
Steel challenge. I shoot open in USPSA. That's my center fire gun for steel challenge. That is, do you have the steel?
I do.
Oh, That's unbelievable. I fine tuned my ammo for it. I replaced the plastic grip with a brass grip module.
Okay.
The gun's a little top heavy. I wasn't necessarily looking for overall weight, but it just feels more balanced with the grip module. And that thing is just a shooter.
Did you change anything else internally?
I my ammo for Steel Challenge is a little lighter. So I thought maybe I could get away with a little lighter recoil spring. And I tried it, and it didn't work.
No,
didn't cycle.
My recoil spring,
even with the lighter ammo, is weird.
My recoil spring is so tight that I cannot rack the slide normally. Like, I have to grab the slide.
Really?
And yeah, it is that stiff. Like, I have a Rival Poly and a Rival S. I can sit there and just work the slide all day. Not with my Rival S, but I'm also having, unfortunately, I'm one of the people having some feeding issues.
So, I've been fortunate with it, and it runs like a top. I got the chrome one. It looked too good.
Me too. I have the exact same one. Yeah. So is that a 507 comp on it?
Yes.
All right. How are you liking that?
So Josh from Holosun sent me and my wife actually a couple last fall. And so I put it on my Canic and I put it on our 22 pistol. It's actually a video out there showing that CWA precision defense pistol. I put it on there. And I really, really like it. We'd ran Seymour RTS2s for years. And I originally started with those because they're a good dot and they're affordable. And so that's just what I've always used. And other than the open gun, we have Trigicon SROs on that. They take a beating. And so he sent these 507 comps. I put them on there and they've held up great so far. Well, the 22 is not going to hurt it.
Right.
I like the reticle choices. My wife uses a different reticle than I do. She likes a different view than me. And so sometimes we'll share a gun. So I think that's where the multiple reticle option is to me.
Doesn't
matter too much. But she likes her dot a little bigger than mine. And there's a little bigger dot. I like the fine one.
Interesting.
When we share, it works out, actually.
And your wife also makes match jerseys.
Wearing one right now. Yeah.
Very nice. So what's the design on there?
Nothing. It was a painting.
Oh, so, okay.
You know, I'll give you a brief explanation, but you should have her in here sometime. She's more interesting than me. So what she'll do is she'll either paint or she'll do it on the computer, and she's an artist by trade. That's what she went to school for. She taught art in college. And she's always been in that. And so she does home decor paintings and stuff. So she didn't like match jerseys. She thought that the current USPSA preferred vendor was too expensive. And she says, well, I can make some cooler designs than this. So she'll either paint and take pictures, or she'll design it from scratch on her computer and size it to a template, add effects, add logos, and sends it off to a printer.
Wow.
Or whatever you want. I wear her stuff because I like it. You know, it's like Nike dry fit kind of material. You know, it's good stuff.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing if you just get on Google and do a search. It's amazing all the different materials and jersey styles you could choose from. And because my wife does, she has a Cricket, and she actually makes my jerseys. So,
yeah.
It's pretty interesting. You can get on there and you can find stuff way cheaper than what I'm seeing prices for it that you would pay for a normal match jersey.
Yeah, well, she's been pretty successful in the last couple of years, and her prices are more affordable. Her designs are more, they can be whatever you want to be. Not a lot of people are going to wear this wild stuff, but if you want to, you can. And so she has Area 2 steel, Area 3 steel, Area 5 steel, Area 3 USPSA. She's going to have Area 6 USPSA. She has a bunch of IDPA matches, so she's actually taken a lot of matches.
Yeah.
Recurring customers and a lot of teams.
That's a pretty good side gig right there.
That's a pretty good gig, yeah. She's talented. Yeah. A lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, it's as many teams and people you mentioned, it's almost a primary gig. That's a lot of.
She spends 80% of her time on this versus her other artwork. Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening, MW Activewear, AKTIV Wear, and it's on Instagram or Facebook, and you can look what she does, and she's got her contact info out there if you're looking for jerseys. But
I'll put her link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Yeah, and there's examples of people's shirts out there that she's done. And, you know, if there's a design you like, you can put your stuff on it, and away you go. Or if you want one from scratch with your own colors and theme, she does that, whatever you want. And she doesn't take 90 days to do it, and she doesn't charge $100 a shirt. I won't say who does that, but somebody out there does that.
Oh, that's funny. So what are yours and your wife's plans for shooting in the future?
So last year we didn't get to shoot as much. Well, we didn't get to practice as much as we wanted last year. Michelle had shoulder surgery last winter, so that kind of held her back. So she didn't shoot pistol much because holding the gun out in front of her was, so she shot PCC, which she really did not enjoy, but it didn't hurt.
But it got her on the range.
It didn't hurt. Right. And we sold a house and bought a house, and so we didn't do much. So this year we've much more deliberate in our practice. We've already done it a couple times, and so we put it on the calendar just like there's an event. Oh, we practice tomorrow? Yes, we do. So that's the big thing is, first of all, we took an off season. You know, we didn't really shoot much from about Thanksgiving till about a week ago. There was one local match in the winter, but we didn't try to touch the guns. I think it's healthy to take time to do other things. And but we're going to shoot some different ones. I'm the range master for the Area 3 steel match next month. And then just signed up for a match today we haven't been to. We try to make trips out of stuff. So we're going to Area 7 Steel Challenge in August.
Okay.
It's New Hampshire. I've never been to New Hampshire, Vermont, or Maine. So we're going to hit those states. So we're going to go up and shoot and then take a few days off and see that part of the country. So we try to we shoot and then we use it as an excuse to take a trip, or vice versa. We use a trip as an excuse to shoot, one or the other. So that's the other one. And then we'll shoot the majors in our area, if you will. And we'll probably sign up for some other stuff. I do not shoot the world shoot, though.
No?
No. $100 a gun, you don't even get a damn hot dog. Why the hell would I do that? It's the same damn place in Talladega every year. It's a nothing town. Move the match around. I've said this other places. I don't get it. You know?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the surrounding area around CNP.
That's fine. You have it there for a couple of years and move it someplace else. You know what I mean? But
right,
you know, there's other places that can hold it. So you'll move it around. It's the same damn 8 stages you're shooting everywhere else. But I won't get into that. That's probably another podcast.
Right. In a way, those are still challenge guys. That's all they want.
Some of them do. Most people, I think, want variety, but there's a cabal, a small group that likes to keep it the way it is.
Okay.
To me, I mean, you want to fix that sport, not fix it. It's not broken, I guess. The problem with a lot of things, when you look at governance, like USPSA board, right? So you could argue USPSA could do the same thing, other than the board of directors are USPSA guys, right? So in theory, politics aside, that's the sport they generally focus on. Steel Challenge is a sideline that makes them a lot of money. You want that sport to improve, have every area director appoint a Steel Challenge liaison, and that should be your committee, right? Every area of the country, and then you can have your director, Steel Challenge, Zach Jones, who does a good job putting on a big match. It's a big match, 650 competitors. But you need diversity in your committee from different areas of the country, to look at how that sport can evolve and grow, because it feels like, to me, from my viewpoint, it's getting stagnant.
Yes. And I will say, I used to shoot Steel Challenge fairly regularly, but it got to a point where, while it's similar to USPSA in that you shoot a little bit and you wait around a bunch, I feel like I'm doing way more standing and less doing anything. It's still challenge. And I ended up just not enjoying it as much because of the wait time.
Yeah. Well, the setup's easier. That's why you're standing around more. It's just paint.
Right. Yeah. It only takes one person to go down there, or maybe two to spray. Right. Whereas USPSA, everybody's going down and being a part of it. But yeah,
we enjoy both. We enjoy both sports, but you know, there's not a lot of people that cross that. There's not a lot of people that do both consistently. We do. Right. I'd say our club about 25% of our club shoots both actually, which is high. I think if you looked at the national level, the people that shoot Steel Challenge, people that shoot USPS, shoot USPSA. I bet it's less than 5% of people nationally that actually cross. It's a different sport. Measure's a different thing. But they're both fun. Do whatever one you like.
Kind of like the IDPA, USPSA difference as well.
Yeah, there's IDPA. There's a little bit of that around here. It's not that popular. I know in different parts of the country it's more popular, but there's some indoor stuff around here. That's about it.
Yeah, there's a club near me that does IDPA and USPSA. And if I go to those same matches in the same month, I will run into two totally different groups of people.
Oh, yeah.
So
100%. 100%.
Well, Todd, that's what I had. Is there anything that we didn't discuss that you wanted to?
Yes.
Okay.
So you asked me questions at the beginning, so I'm going to end by asking you a question.
Yours okay.
Probably said more eloquently, but I always think that this is a fun one. So you're on death row. You're getting the needle tomorrow. What's your last meal?
That's a good question. And I think I would have to probably go with a 20-ounce ribeye.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Medium with a sweet potato, all the trimmings on it, and
for dessert.
Oh man, I'm not a,
you don't
not
have to huge... be on a diet. You're getting the needle tomorrow, so
right. That is my diet the next day, you know. Right. I'm not a huge dessert guy, but I think I would have to say tiramisu.
There you go.
So you should have that would be it. And I, you know what? I don't care how sick I felt from overeating. I don't care.
It won't matter. It's a good question.
Won't feel anything for 24 hours. After 24 hours.
You can steal that one if you want. It's a good one.
Will do.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on. It was a fun conversation.
You bet. Look forward to listening to your next guests.
I appreciate it. And hopefully I can have you back on sometime.
Yeah, you bet. I'd be happy to. You have a nice day.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.